You're listening to Boards and Swords, episode number 40. That's right, everyone. Welcome to Boards and Swords, a podcast exploring the world of tabletop gaming and my experiences in it. I'm your host. My name is Chris Renshaw. Got a lot of great stuff for you guys this week. It's been a while since we've done some decent board game talk, so this episode is pretty much all going to be about board games. There's not going to be any magic talk. There's not going to be any D&D work. We're going straight on board games. I got a couple at the top of the show. This is a very exclusive episode because for our board game breakdown, I'm going to do something I've never done before, and I'm going to break down a Kickstarter game. That's right. I'm going to break down a Kickstarter game, and no, it is not Exploding Kittens. So, and then we're going to touch things up with my experiences on International Tabletop Day, which happened this past Saturday. Yes, that's why this episode's coming to you a little late. I wanted to make sure to have a chance to talk about Tabletop Day and include that in this episode. So here we go. We will start things off with the way I normally do and talk about what games I've been playing. So it's been a while, so start off fresh. A couple weeks ago, I finally got one of my coworkers from work. We nickname him Diablo Tim because he plays a lot of Diablo. And I got him to come to our weekly board game night. And we sat down and played Rampage, which if we've talked about it before. Rampage is the dexterity game where you build up the meeples, the buildings with meeples, and then you have to try and knock them down in various funny ways, either blowing or flicking discs at the buildings, that kind of thing. Very fun game. I really love it. It's a great game for if you're trying to get people into games they've never heard of. It's a great introductory kind of game, mainly just because it's so fun to play and to watch. You know, you flick a bus thing into a building and the whole thing just collapse. It's really great. I think he had a blast with that, especially considering he beat me in two rounds of Magic before that. So, but I was playing with an old deck. I mean, come on. And that deck was terrible. Let's see. Also, then following that, I entered a Netrunner tournament for the first time. A Sunday, either it was that Sunday or the Sunday later. I had some free time. Was not doing some stuff around the house. There we have a weekly, or there's a Facebook group I'm a part of that's all about playing different LCGs and X-Wing and stuff around this area. And they meet every Sunday and do different tournaments and events. Or playing like Imperial Assault or Netrunner or the Warhammer 40K Conquest card game, or X-Wing. They started doing Star Trek Armada or Star Wars Armada. Sorry, Star Trek Armada is a game, another video game. So I finally had a Sunday I was free and went and hung out and played Netrunner. And they were doing a tournament. I didn't have time to stay for the whole tournament, but I played a round and a half before I had to drop and get home for a few things. And I won as the corp and as the runner. I won a whole round. I tripling my win ratio in Netrunner. I pause there for a minute because it's kind of embarrassing to say that I won against a 10-year-old. That's who I was matched up with in the first round, and I won. But she knew her stuff. That girl knew her stuff. I was very impressed because Chloe's asked me stuff about Netrunner in the past, and I told her it was probably way too over her head, especially considering she's still getting a hold of Magic and all the concepts in that. I thought Netrunner was kind of beyond her ability, but here I'm seeing this 10-year-old, you know, do a pretty good job of rocking my face, and then it just happened. I just happened to finally batter, you know, hold out, basically deal some brain damage to reduce her card hand size, and that ended up winning me as the corp. And then I just quickly hitting quickly hitting the R&D over and over again for the to win as the runner. So there we go. I finally won as the corp, so achievement unlocked, and I've now won twice as the runner in Netrunner. And of course, then again, the next run I got paired with somebody else and they owned my face. Also, one of the things I've been able to do here recently is Ashley and I have been actually getting more into playing digital games again. It's been a while, but we used to sit on the couch and pull out the iPad and play games like Catan and Pandemic and that sort of thing. And we just finally got to the point where we're done doing a lot of work on the house. So we had a free Saturday evening. And so we just laid on the couch and pulled up games on the iPad and played against each other. But the best part is now, because in the past we've played where it's pass and play, where I take my turn, I hand it to you, you take your turn. In Catan, that kind of sucks, because especially when every time you want to do a deal, you got to pass the iPad. So, but fortunately, since the last time we played, they've introduced online multiplayer into the Catan app for the iPad. And so I have my iPad mini, she has her iPad mini, we're both on the couch. And then we could just like, you know, I take my turn and she takes her turn and I take, and then we don't have to pass the iPad around. It's a lot of fun. And we also, I recently bought Carcassonne and that has an online option, or that has a multiplayer online option as well. And so we had been playing that too. We even got on Easter, we even got Chloe into playing while we were just waiting for we're over at the in-laws waiting for dinner to get, or lunch, dinner, whatever it was, get cooked. And so we were chilling on the couch playing Carcassonne. Both of those games are games I highly recommend if you're wanting some good games for the iPad that you could play that are just as similar as the board game. I definitely recommend the Catan and the Carcassonne app and Ticket to Ride. In fact, when we're talking about digital games, Ticket to Ride actually beats the regular game for me just because it takes all the math and counting all the trains. And, you know, just all the different, you know, setting up the board and everything. I find the app to be far better to play than the board game, mainly just because it's quick and easy and it's simple and the app works so great. Carcassonne, I found it was really cool that, so in the app, when you're playing the game and you know, you have all these tiles that you can drop, and every time you drop the tile, they make this kind of kink sound, and I was like, why does that sound so familiar? And I realized, oh, because of what the board game tiles are made out of, they make the exact same sound when they like hit a hard surface. So when you drop them on the table, they make the same little kink noise when they hit the table. I wish I could, my Carcassonne was nearby, I'd grab it and drop it in front of the mic so you could hear what I'm talking about. But it was weird that they must have captured that sound and use that as the tile dropping sound in the Carcassonne app. So it was just, it was really minor. It's a very minor detail. It's not something that's going to make or break the game, but it helped me feel more like I'm playing the board game, even though I'm on the iPad. And I just thought that little touch of detail was pretty sweet. Let's see. Also, so we're going to talk about this in the breakdown, but I found out that I got back in touch with the people that I talked about a few episodes. I want to say it was about 4 months ago. I mentioned the Kickstarter game, or the game that was going to be coming soon to Kickstarter, which is called Norsaga, that I had a chance to play and try out. And I had a chance to play it again, and we'll talk about it in a little bit later. But it is actually now available on Kickstarter. So just a little note for that. Then also, I finally had a chance, something with me, and if you've listened to the show for a while, you've heard me talk about Peter, aka Pop Culture Cube on Twitter. Him and I have hit constantly back and forth are talking about board games and D&D and such. And we have been trying to plan a Dice Masters game over Skype for a while. And we finally sat down on Friday and played Dice Masters. So this is the first time I played a tournament style Dice Masters where you have 8 cards and two basic actions. They have two basic actions and eight cards. You're at 20 life. So first time we had played, and a one. Just want to say that. But it was a very close game. We were pretty much every time he would deal damage, I would deal the same amount of damage to him the next turn. And we were just kind of like chasing each other down in life. And then finally I made a push right at the end to win. But the team I used was mostly dragons. I made my dragon team in D&D. I used exclusively D&D Dice Masters, except for I had one Yu-Gi-Oh card that was the Lord of D or Lord of Dragons. He helps buff dragon, any card that has dragons on it. So you could see where this came in handy. I used mostly dragons, except for I couldn't fill out the... I was still short people, so I threw in... what else did I throw in? I threw in like Elf Wizard, and I think I had a Drow Assassin in there. I can't remember. I have to pull out the cards and look. But I think the deck worked really well. It's still interesting playing the tournament game where you have all these options, and you're when you roll, and it's like, oh, do I want to try and get some action die here, or do I want to try and roll? You know, do I want to try and roll for the sidekicks and field those and try to take his health down, or should I be rolling for these higher things, or should I be taking these higher things, or rolling these dice to try and get the monsters and fight? It's a lot more complicated once you start getting into the tournament style. You have all these different options. And then it's like, okay, I got five energy, but there's like three cards I could buy. What's going to help me out right now? I will say the basic action I used is the Magic Missile that's offered in the D&D set. That card is awesome, and I definitely like using that. That will probably definitely be a mainstay in the future. So, as far as playing, it was the first time I played a game over Skype, and that was interesting. So basically I had my laptop, I couldn't find my connection to get my mic into it. So I was just using the room mic, and then I plugged in headphones. I had, my camera on a tripod set up kind of over my shoulder, cause that was the best view. I tried using like the webcam. Putting a webcam on top of the computer and angling it down, but you get most of the computer and only like a couple of the cards. And I really wanted him to see all the cards. So I kind of put the webcam on the tripod over my shoulder and looked down. But that was kind of, it was kind of janky, mainly because anytime I moved my chair or my leg, I would bump the camera and now it'd be off. So I definitely think I want to try and tweak that a little bit. I need to find a way of mounting. Maybe I can get... you know what would be really sweet is I need to get another one of these arms that I have my mic on. You could probably hear that jangle right there. One of these bendable boom arms that I have my mics on, put them, or at least get an attachment for one of the ones I already have, put the camera on that, and then have it just angled above, straight above shot, so you could see exactly down what I'm looking at. That would be sweet. So that I may have to work on that in the future. And then lastly, I picked up a game. So I'm going to talk about Tabletop Day later. Actually, just after the breakdown, we're going to talk about the Tabletop Day. But I bought a game there because I went to a new... It was at a game store, and I don't like to leave a game store without buying stuff. I like to at least, you know, support the store, especially if I've been there a while playing games. So I spent a good like 15, 30 minutes and various pieces going up and down their board game aisle because they had a lot of stuff. And I had some ideas of games I wanted, but I hadn't played any of them. And so I didn't want to like throw out a bunch of money on a game I'd never played before. But I took a risk, and I had heard a lot about the game Dead of Winter. And so I bought that game, took it home, and Ashley and I watched the tabletop for Dead of Winter, just to get an idea of how the game played, brush up on some of the rules, etc. And it looked awesome. And I was so excited because I even took a picture of it and sent it to her when I was at the store, because I know we're both big fans of Walking Dead, and we've played some zombie games in the fore, like one of the Walking Dead board games that's been out. But we broke it out with my co-host Philip from the OCD podcast. We broke out it on Sunday after the show, and that game is pretty sweet. So we actually got a playthrough of it. It is basically Walking Dead, the board game. It doesn't have Walking Dead in it in any circumstance, but it's basically Walking Dead, the board game, where you are a group of survivors in a colony. There's a couple of spaces outside the colony where you can go forage for supplies. You have an objective you have to do to beat the game. It's a co-op game. And you, each round, you're trying to work towards that objective. You're also trying to work towards the crisis that's on for that round. And you're trying to work towards your secret objective as well. Everybody has a secret objective. And one of the secret objectives could be to backstab the colony out for your own personal vendetta, which is a really neat aspect of it. And it's all about this. This story has an ongoing, or this game has an ongoing story. There's these crossroad cards that add to that story. It's a really sweet game. And it will probably have to be in a breakdown as soon as I get more plays of it, because we played it on Sunday and we did not do well. So we started off with like six or seven rounds. We were dead in three, just because Philip made a wrong move, went to kill a zombie, but you have to roll for exposure and got bit. So his character immediately dies, but he was in the colony, so it spreads to all the other characters that were there, and just one by one, we're trying to like heal them up, and it's just like bad die roll over bad die roll over bad die roll. And suddenly, all of our people are dead, which you get new people, so you're not eliminated if your player dies, but your morale, there's a morale track, and when it goes to zero, game over. And sure enough, we knocked down the morale track by like four in one turn, and then the following crisis knocked us out completely. So that was it. It's a pretty awesome game. It's one of those games that takes a while to set up, and it definitely needs an insert to be built, I think, for it. But I also think it could be a chance for it to get blinged out a little bit, because it comes with cardboard standees for all the zombies and the characters. But I think it would be cool to throw down some minis and get some zombie minis for the game, and that would be really sweet. So definitely expect to hear more about Dead of Winter in the future, but I definitely didn't have a huge amount of time with it. But it was what I did get with it was fun. It was short, obviously. One of those games takes a while to set up, but takes a little bit of time to set up and talk people how to play through the game and get them all on the same page. But then once you're actually playing, it may not even take that very long. You're talking maybe, depending on the scenario that you're playing, after you set up the game, it could be anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. So I'm definitely glad, because this is a pretty sweet game that I think I could get out at our weekly board game nights and get some more plays in. And for that, I am really excited for. Before I go any further, I just want to mention that we do have a number where you can call in tell your stories. In particular, I want to know, how was your tabletop day? So send me an email, send us a phone call, 252-357-9673. That's 252-35-SWORD. And so call in. Let me know what you played on Tabletop Day, and if you had any funny stories or interesting stories of things that happened, let me know, and you can, and I will play them here on the show. So with that, also just want to remind you that this podcast is a part of the Dice Tower Network. Go check out some of the other great games or other great shows about board gaming by heading over to DiceTowerNetwork.com. All right, then. With that, it's time for the board game breakdown. And as I mentioned, we're going to do a first here, and I'm going to break down a Kickstarter game, a game that's currently on Kickstarter. If you like the description that I'm about to give and the breakdown of it, I will say that you can go to Kickstarter right now, and it still has 14 days to go. That game is called Norse Saga. It's a game by Merrimorph Games. It's currently at the time of this recording, $12,677 out of its $15,000 goal. And like I said, it's got 14 days to go. And you can get on this game for as little as $20. gets you a copy of the game, $20 and then $1 worth of shipping. Game is for 2 to 4 players, plays in about 30 minutes, and on the box they say ages 10 and up. I can verify that because I played it with the 10-year-old, and she was on the line of understanding being able to play. So she was able to get it, but just barely. So I don't know. I mean, your mileage may vary with your kids. But it's a two to four player puzzle battle card game. And it's about you're a Viking trying to recount your heroic exploits and trying to take advantage, or you're trying to backstab your other players' stories as well. So the way this works, and if you want to try out the game, if you go to the Kickstarter page, there's a free print and play of the game. And so the way the game works is you start off the game with a saga. This is a card that has the tale that you're trying to tell. It's some big heroic quest that you're trying to tell your exploit for. And there are markers down at the bottom of the card. They can be of 4 colors. You've got yellow, blue, green, and red. And it'll be different amounts. And depending on what kind of a story of it is, if it's something more heroic in the sense of battle, you'll have more red. If it's more of a quest of knowledge, it'll be more blue kind of thing. And you'll have these different colors that to complete your tale and win the game, you have to have these markers. They're called inheritance markers. And so, for instance, one of the demo cards that's up here, it's 1 yellow, 2 red, 3 green. So over the course of your family tree that you're going to build, that's the other, you build a family tree that gives you the traits that you need to tell this story. And you need to have those inheritance markers. So this way this works is your family tree, it'll be you, it'll be your parents, so it'll be 2 cards. Think of it, it forms the shape of a pyramid. So you have you, your parents, and your grandparents. So 1 card, 2 card, and then 4 cards. By the way, there is no specific gender requirements. This game gives you the leeway to have a little fun with it, especially in the storytelling aspect, because you're going to be replacing cards. So you can play this game with just, I'm going to play these cards, I'm going to get this, I'm going to do this. Or you can really get into the storytelling if you want and talk about when someone makes you replace a card, talk about, well, it turns out that person wasn't actually my parent, I'm going to play this card instead. Or maybe this person died and my mother remarried, kind of thing. So the way it works is on your turn, at the beginning of your turn, you're going to draw until you have 4 cards in your hand. Then you're going to use what's called an embellishment. An embellishment is basically a power that you get for your lineage. And unlike the inheritance marker thing, so let me explain the card play and then I'll talk about the embellishment. So every card in this game has a dominant trait. So there's a color on it, a large symbol on it that tells what the dominant trait of that is. And then it's half of a little hexagon, and that's the recessive trait. And they're different. They could be different colors. They could be the same color. One could be green and yellow. One could be red and red. So the way it works is you play it, and you can take the dominant part, or you can pair up if you're talking, not for you, but for like your parents and your grandparents. If you have 2 cards that have the same color recessive trait, then you can get that credit too. But the way this works is that per grouping, so your parents and each of your grandparents, you can only pick one of the dominant traits, but one of the colors of the dominant traits between them. And these traits are going to be what gives you those inheritance markers to complete your game. So if you need a yellow, 2 red, and 3 green, for instance, say you might have a dominant green trait. Your parents may have, one of them may have a dominant green, the other one has a dominant blue, but you can only take one, so you take the green, and then maybe they have a recessive green, both have recessive green, so there's your 3 green. Now you just need the 1 yellow and 2 red. So maybe one of your grandparents has a yellow dominant trait, and then maybe a recessive red, and then all you need on the other side is just someone to have a dominant red. So that's the puzzle aspect of it. You have to organize your family tree, and you can do this by you're going to be replacing cards all the time. So you'll play cards down to form this tree, then you'll replace them as you need to kind of get these puzzles to line up so that you achieve the markers that you need to tell your tale. So having said that, I'm going to go back to playing. Like I said, you draw until you have four cards. Use an embellishment. The way embellishment works is all based on what you are. So of the four colors, you get, you know, the red, yellow, blue, and green. Whatever you play as, that color you then get to have an embellishment for. It's a secret. It is a special power, and it changes. Each color is a different one. So I forget if they. Let me see. I may be able to bring it up. So, like for instance, if you start off as yellow, you can, as your embellishment, discard your hand and draw three cards. You could, if you're green, you can look. You can plunder. Look at a player's hand. You can swap a card from your hand with a card for theirs. If you're blue, you could draw a card, then discard a card. And if you're red, you can dismiss for free one of the heroes in your tree and replace it with another. And the way this works is those are all called first generation embellishments. If you start to stack your colors, so if you choose to be red, you play the red card as your starting card, and then you have a red card in your second gen, your parents, then you can now activate the second gen embellishments, which get a little bit stronger. And then if you have in the same line, if you have a red in your grandparents, so you know, you red, your one side, you know, let's just for the sake of the matter, paternal side red, and then on that paternal side grandparent red, then you activate the third gen, and the third gen are the strongest, and that's where you really can start to mess with other people, such as you can play card. One, I think the red third gen is you can play a card directly on another player's family tree. See, on yellow, you can dismiss one of the, each player dismisses one of their heroes, draw that many cards, and place them where those heroes tend to be, so you get to control kind of what people are doing, and you can use this to mess up other people's chains to keep them from getting what saga they need, and keep them from having their embellishments as well. So then after this embellishment phase, then you just play the last phase is playing a card to expand your family tree, and you keep going with this over and over until somebody earns all the inheritance markers needed to win their saga. It sounds kind of complicated, but once you get the playthrough, you'll understand. There's an even more complicated mode that adds in these black and purple cards. I'm not going to go into that. I will just say that it adds a lot more depth to the game. So the version of the game I just explained to you is the basic overall game. The expanded game that adds in the black and the purple cards adds a little bit more depth to the game because it allows you to mess with your opponents a lot more, because those cards can be directly played on other people, or at least the black ones can. So there's a lot of stuff here for a very simple game and it's definitely a game that can be played over and over again because it's always going to change, and you've got all these different sagas. You're not going to have the same saga twice, at least until you play this game a large number of times. And so I've played this game a handful of times now. I definitely prefer the expanded game versus the basic game. The basic game was what I had played last time, and I was kind of like, it's okay. I don't know. Once I played the expanded game that has the black and the purple in it, it really made the game shine to me. First of all, I will also say the artwork on this game is amazing. It looks very well done, and it's got a nice polish and sheen to it. The components of the game look great. The theme is as much there as you want it to be, and that's kind of cool. So depending on your group, you can make it as thematic or less thematic as you want. So that's great. And then the gameplay is just a lot of fun, and it's really short. We managed to play a couple of games in an hour. So I've pledged. So this is the second Kickstarter I've now backed. So I have pledged to get this game. And also, if you follow me on Twitter and Instagram, you'll see whenever it comes in. I think they were hoping for later this year to produce. But this is their first Kickstarter. So they understand that may slide. But they already had the the version of the game that they showed me looked pretty sweet and legit. And so if the final version looks anything like that, it's going to be a beautiful game to have on the shelf. Even if you get it just for the, you know, I mean, it's almost worth it just for the artwork alone. And it's just a nice, pretty game that you can have on the shelf. But it's a really simple and great puzzle game if you're looking something to fill that kind of quick card game niche. So that's Norse Saga. Like I said, you can find it on Kickstarter. And I hope you guys will go, because these guys are local. They work at one of the guys works in the same. Ironically, I find out he works really close to where I work. And it was really funny story about how that happened. So he came and tried out the game, and I came and talked to you guys and said something about it. And then a couple months later, he just happened to be doing a search as he was going on Kickstarter and found the Kickstarter or the found the podcast where I talked about it and listened to it, and then followed me on Twitter and started talking about it. I was really weird. I was like, how did you find me? Because I never told him that I did a podcast. I was just kind of listening. I didn't want to brag or anything, or, you know, be like, oh, I have a podcast. And so I just was playing the game, and then I came here to say my thoughts about it. And it's just weird how that connection kind of came back. So I definitely want to see this game succeed. So if you're interested, head on over to Kickstarter and then let them know that you heard about it from here. And then lastly, I want to finish up the show by talking about International Tabletop Day. That's right. This past Saturday was the International Tabletop Day. It is the third annual International Tabletop Day? Third or fourth? Can't remember off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure it's the third. So one of the podcasts that I listen to, and I probably talked about it here before, is The Secret Cabal. It's a group of great guys that live up in Pennsylvania, and they were having a tabletop day at 6 Feet Under Games in New Holland, Pennsylvania. Well, that only is like 3.5 hours away from me. And I was, you know, I've played a lot of the game, like our store was doing a tabletop day, and I usually go to that, but I was wanting something different. I wanted to experience some new games. The kinds of people that come to our store and the kinds of games they have at our store, I've kind of played a lot of them, you know? I've done a lot of that. I wanted to see something new. So we took the 3.5 hour drive, Chloe and I drove up there and hung out up there at 6 Feet Under Games, getting into those games. It was a little hard to get into games, but that's just a problem with game days in general. And I find that unless you're at a convention where you've got huge numbers of people, or if you bring a group with you, it's hard to get into games at these game days unless you just kind of like grab somebody as they walk by, be like, play this game. So we got there and we played a couple games. We played Formula D for the first time. I'd seen how to play that. I'd seen the tabletop for that, but I played that. It was fun. It's a racing game where you're basically rolling dice and moving around this cart. And that sounds kind of boring, but there's a lot into it because you have different gears that you can shift up and down, which if you shift up, the more you shift up, the bigger your dice gets, so you can roll and go farther. But you have to stop in these curves or you take damage and explode. So you have to be careful of how you have to plan out your attack. Like, okay, I got to downshift now, or I have to stay where I am now because I'm going to make it out of this curve, and then I can upshift into a big, huge, into a bigger die and try and get some spaces on the board. I played a Euro game called Oddville, which kind of feels kind of Carcassonne-y, where you have cards and you're playing cards down to form this kind of city, and you're using those cards to get points, and then you're gathering resources. So it's kind of like Catan and Carcassonne mashed together, because you need resources and then getting cards to build those cards and then place those cards in particular places to get the most points. So Chloe ended up winning that, and I was really surprised because she seemed to have trouble with the beginning, which I had trouble with in the beginning. Then Chloe wanted to play a couple simple games, so we played Timeline and Pirate Flux. But then one of the last games that we played, because we decided to head home early because I wanted to show Ashley Dead of Winter mainly, and mainly also because we had a 3-hour drive heading back as well. But I got my hands on Batman Love Letter. So I've played Munchkin Loot Letter, So it's basically the same game, but somebody else had it, and I was curious to see how different it played or what it was like. So I tried out Batman Love Letter, and Chloe was like, we need to get this game because her and I are definitely more on board with the comic book-ness of Batman Love Letter. I wish they would call it something other than Batman Love Letter because that just sounds weird. Like, I don't know. Batman Assault Letter. I don't know what it is. Batman Batarang Letter. Something other than just saying Batman, the Batman edition of Love Letter. That just sounds weird. But we both know, you know, her and I know a lot more about, you know, Batman and DC Comics than the, than like, say, Munchkin or the regular Love Letter. So it definitely clicked with her more seeing the, the Batman characters, and you got like Robin and Poison Ivy and the Joker and all that sort of stuff. And instead of these just little cubes, you get the little Batman tokens for winning instead. All that was really fun and really cool. So it's really cheap. It's only like $10. I may actually have to pick it up, and then I may take Munchkin Loot Letter and keep it like in a bag or something. So I've always got it with me, and then I've got Love Letter here for when I play it. So that was all the stuff I played at Tabletop Day. I had a lot of fun, met a couple of really great people, had a blast. Not sure if I would make the drive up there again, just because it was a long drive. Maybe if I was staying overnight, that would be the only thing. If I was not, I would not do the day trip again. That was a little bit much, but had a lot of fun and definitely got what I wanted, which was to get out and try some new stuff. And so in that, I succeeded. And with that, that is everything I have for you guys. This podcast is an Obsessive Comics Disorder production. Make sure you go visit OCDcast.com for more great videos and podcasts, such as the main OCD podcast where we make fun of comics and all the other geeky things we obsess over. Want to contribute to the show? Send me an email with what you're playing to feedback@boardsandswords.com. Or call me on the number I mentioned above, 252-35-SWORD. Send me on Twitter. You can also find me at Chris the Prof, or on Facebook, facebook.com/obsessivecomicsdisorder. Also, go check out my Instagram, Chris the Professor, to see pictures of all the games that I'm currently playing. With that, that is all I've got for you guys. I will see you guys in another 2 weeks for more great gaming talk. Thank you guys for listening. Now head out there and play more games.